In his new book, The Perfect Bet, How Science and Math Are Taking the Luck Out of Gambling, mathematician Adam Kucharski reveals the long and tangled history between betting and science, weaving together ideas from mathematics, psychology, economics, and physics. Kucharski brings to life the game of chance. He introduces readers to a group of MIT students who made a fortune playing Massachusetts state lottery games, showing how PhD-level pundits are using methods originally developed for the U.S. nuclear program to accurately predict field goals and race times, and explains why poker is one of the ultimate challenges for artificial intelligence. Again, the title of the book is The Perfect Bet. Adam Kucharski is a lecturer in mathematical modeling at the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine and an award-winning science writer. He studied at the University of Warwick before completing a PhD in mathematics at the University of Cambridge. Again, the book is The Perfect Bet. We welcome Adam Kucharski to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
What brought you to this particular subject of looking at gambling and science and math, the connections?
I've always had an interest in mathematics. A lot of my qualifications are in that. And I've actually also had a very long-standing interest in betting and in games. I think most people with a mathematical background really like problem solving and looking for ways to change and challenge existing systems. And the more I looked into this, the more I realized actually this isn't just a hobby, that actually gambling has really been intertwined with science throughout history. A lot of the ideas that are fundamental in mathematics, from probability to statistics to chaos theory, originated with people studying these kind of gambling systems and betting. And actually, it's really going full circle, as well as changing science. A lot of the ideas from science, in turn, have been used by people to take on casinos. So I thought it was a really fascinating history. And then even going up to the modern day, the links between science and gambling are presenting all these ideas to really making us think about what we mean by chance and randomness and predictability.
One of the things that kept on going through my mind as I was reading the book is, why haven't we come to this sooner?
That's a very good question. In many cases, I think it takes an outsider to look at these kind of problems. One of the things I found remarkable about the book is it's very rarely gamblers who solve a lot of these games and find these systems. Often it's somebody, you know, whether a physicist or a mathematician, or just someone really kind of from a very different way of thinking that comes in. I suppose you could use a similar analogy in technology and business. You know, we could say, why didn't this certain product or certain idea come along before then? But sometimes it just takes somebody with that innovative way of thinking coming into an industry and really disrupting how it's done.
When you think about those different branches of the gambler versus the scientist or the mathematician, what is it about the overall luck of it that the scientist and the mathematician are able to take out of the equation?
One of the things I think really scientists and mathematicians can do very well is approach these things as a scientific problem. So a lot of these games have a lot of reputation and almost dogma behind them about whether they're beatable. And games like roulette, I still meet people who just say, this can never be beaten. And I think people with that kind of scientific outlook on life really look at the data. You know, they look at an experiment. They say, well, is this unbeatable? I'm going to test it. I'm going to see how these things actually work. And I think it's that collecting information and running experiments and really nudging away and seeing where things are unbeatable and where the gaps are, which has enabled them to take luck out of many of these games.
But when you think about roulette as a game, and there are other games, of course, but I just want to focus on roulette for a moment, because it's basically a ping pong ball bopping around on a wheel. So to think of that in mathematic or even scientific terms, the odds are one thing. But how do you then negotiate that into something much more clear and finite?
That's a good point. Well, there's a mathematician, actually, about 100 or so years ago called Henri Poincaré, who he called it the levels of ignorance. Because if you think of a roulette table and a ball bouncing around, the unpredictability, the randomness of the outcome is basically you having a lack of information. Because if you knew all of the physical laws and exactly the motion of the ball bouncing around the table, then in theory, just using the laws of physics, you should be able to predict what might happen. And actually, that's one thing that a number of teams did successfully. They realized that what seems like a random outcome, actually, if you look at the roulette table, it's spinning around a bit before the croupier calls no more bets. And if you collect information on the ball's speed and trajectory before that point where you can't bet, you can actually gather enough information to predict what might actually happen in future. And that was one method that people used. Another one was actually even simpler. They just looked at tables for a long period of time. And if you think you have a roulette table that wears down, it might not be perfectly smooth, or there might be a slight bias, the full might not be even. And if you collect enough data on the table, then you can spot these inconsistencies and then place your bets, for instance, on the half of the table where there's more of a slant and the ball's more likely to land.
And at the risk of just moving ahead of myself a little bit, so there's always a chase going on between what science knows and how the casinos and the game operators are working it, so that if the scientists and the mathematicians are catching up, that changes? Is that kind of the way it goes?
There's certainly been this game of cat and mouse over the years. And particularly, I think, casinos who had games that they thought were unbeatable, and then it turns out that wasn't true, becomes a bit of an issue. So in many casinos now, you're not allowed to bring in computers. And a lot of that was because these gamblers who'd use computers to understand these roulette spins. I mean, these kind of physics problems you can't solve in your head. You need a computer to help you understand the trajectory of the ball. So that has, in turn, influenced what games gamblers can tackle. But I think in many cases, people who've been put off or blocked, you know, so some of them just get recognized in too many casinos and just can't actually get in. And there's stories of people having to turn to disguises and things to avoid security. But often they'll just turn their attention to other games. And one of the things I found really interesting is how many of these people with their quite scientific and quite innovative mindsets have either turned to different areas of gambling or in some cases have just gone into technology or research or finance. I think there's a lot of industries out there where if you've had this almost training in casinos trying to hone these ideas about probability and risk, it sets you up well for a number of other industries.
Is their idea for the people who do this, it's to find out those probabilities more than it is to take on the casino and to make money?
It's been a mix. There are obviously certain people who have developed these systems and have done very well out of it, but I really have been surprised at how many people who either just do it as a curiosity. I mean, for many of these people, they would make money more successfully in other ways. And there were a couple of stories actually in the book of people who worked out loopholes in gambling systems and then added up how much effort it would take them and then realized their day job was just a better, you know, bet to pursue, actually, that it wasn't worth their time. I think for them, it's really just that curiosity. It's a puzzle that is there to be solved. And I think that's really what's driving a lot of these systems. It's not people who want to become career gamblers. It's just scientifically minded people who've got this curiosity about how the world works and are using gambling as a way of testing that out.
You talk in the book about many games, blackjack and a lottery and even roulette, of course, as we mentioned. And then you talk about horse racing and organized sports, betting on football and soccer and the like, basketball. That must be a whole different thing when there is a living thing involved in the equation.
It is, and it's often much more difficult to predict. If you think of something like blackjack, you're essentially dealing with quite a straightforward probability problem. And once the method was devised, the method will work in all these situations. But of course, as you said, for things like horse races or sport, you've got a lot of individuals. And in many cases, gamblers have focused on specific sports. So one of the reasons all these betting syndicates focused on horse races in Hong Kong is there's a very small number of horses that race against each other again and again. So if you think of it as a science experiment, you're designing something where you can view the results again and again to see which horses perform well in different conditions. Somewhere like the US is much harder because you've just got a vast number of racetracks and lots of horses that might not always race against each other in the same conditions, so it's much noisier to work out what's going on. And similar with sport, that sports like baseball have a very long history of data because you have these one-on-one pitcher versus batter battles. But things where you've got a lot of individuals, things like basketball or hockey, it can be much harder to actually work out what's going on during a game.
You have a chapter in the book that I found fascinating entitled The Model Opponent, which was about the IBM computer Watson taking on two Jeopardy champions and how that worked out. What did that, in such a commercial way, show us as a culture and a society of what was possible?
Really, I think for artificial intelligence, there's been some fascinating developments over recent years. As you mentioned, Watson is one of these examples where they could take these contestant questions and convert them to answers and do this well enough to actually beat two players who were the most successful Jeopardy players in history. And we've seen more recently, actually, with the Google AlphaGo program, who's playing Go, which is this very complex board game, more complex than chess in some ways, really challenging the human champions at these games. So I think it's a really interesting test in many ways for machines to learn and actually surpass their creators. And one of the things I found really interesting researching the book is when you look at games like poker, a lot of the teams that come up with these incredibly successful computer programs aren't particularly good at the games themselves. So in many ways, they've created an intelligence which has far surpassed their own ability. And this really, we're seeing, you know, from game shows to casino games, many of these bots and programs are really testing what we think about artificial intelligence and in many cases surpassing even the best humans.
Do you think that is why, at least in this country, there has not been a move toward online gaming and gambling to a great degree, because I would think, in just what you're saying, that would give an advantage to both the house as well as to the gambler if their respective machines are operating?
That would be an issue, of course. I mean, there's a lot of legislation as well around online gambling, which is limiting it in certain areas. But one of the people I talked to in the book actually is someone who, again, as just a curiosity, devised a poker bot to play on websites for fairly small sums. It was really kind of a side project for him. But he found that you get closed down very quickly, and especially the very good poker sites will introduce things that make it quite hard for bots. So they'll maybe move the windows around on the screen, or if people start talking to you in the chat or this kind of thing. So he actually had to design his bot to look more human. He had to teach it to make mistakes and not play too many hands at the same time and this sort of thing. So I think there are a lot of countermeasures out there. And in some cases, people with these kind of bots are actually having to teach them to be more fallible and be more human to actually escape the casino's attention.
One of the things I found fascinating in the book is you mentioned the name of Alan Turing a lot, who was a legendary codebreaker, which I guess gives me the idea that we sort of have been working on this for a long time.
Yes, Turing was a really interesting character in the book. One of the things that I wasn't aware of actually until I started researching this was he'd written a paper on poker. It was an unfinished manuscript, but he was obviously very interested, as well as his work on codebreaking, in games and what this meant for intelligence. And actually, a lot of the comments he made back in the 1940s were miles ahead of their time in terms of his statements about, as he said it, it doesn't make sense to create an adult mind, so don't tell a computer all these rules and instructions. Create a child's mind and let it learn. And these are the exact same approaches that a lot of these teams are using. And actually, last year, when one of these teams of researchers came up with a perfect strategy, so for two-player limit poker, they found this optimal strategy that in the long term won't lose money. I thought it was rather apt that they, at the end of that piece of research, when they published it, they made this quote from Alan Turing of saying, you know, there may be many applications of this kind of work, but yeah, we really should admit that a lot of it was just for the sheer fun of the thing. And I think Turing captured that in a lot of his work, that he was using games just to satisfy this curiosity about what machines could do. And he came up with a lot of suggestions. The Imitation Game is the famous one, but there's a lot of other examples of these kind of games that you can use to test how well artificial intelligence is performing. We're seeing a lot of this with poker, that's a really good challenge for these learning machines.
So in the end, is there such thing as a perfect bet?
I think it's very hard to say if there is a perfect bet, but I think certainly the search for that perfect bet has been fantastically valuable. I think really throughout history, the motivation to try and understand how games can be beaten has created vast areas of research, you know, from probability to game theory to many of the recent developments in artificial intelligence. And I think that's something which is really worth looking at if we want to understand how these things are going to progress in future.
The name of the book, The Perfect Bet, How Science and Math Are Taking the Luck Out of Gambling. It is published by Basic Books. Adam Kasharsky, I thank you so much for spending time with us and sharing your expertise.
Thank you.
Great pleasure. Thank you.
Again, the title of the book is The Perfect Bet, How Science and Math Are Taking the Luck Out of Gambling by Adam Kasharsky. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.